Aunt Pat's back in the studio.
Okay. This is the John Curley Sherry Ellicker show. Guess what she bought?
Some more Arnold Palmer.
Yeah, you can buy Arnold Palmer, so you can buy them in a big thing. She used to mix them up on her own. Now she realized they'd sell them in a big container. Okay, thank you, Aunt Pat. Diving in the door! No. All right, a UN representative, declares, quote, "We own the science," at the World Economic Forum. They were talking about the fact that, I'll just let her speak for herself. Don't forget, they own the science. The science is something that can be owned. So she's explaining how,
we partnered with Google, for example. If you Google climate change, you will, at the top of your search, you will get all kinds of UN resources. We started this partnership when we were shocked to see that when we'd Googled climate change, we were getting incredibly distorted information right at the top. So we're becoming much more proactive. We own the science, and we think that the world, should know it. And the platforms themselves also do. But again, it's a huge, huge challenge that I think all sectors of society need to be very active in.
Isn't that interesting? I mean, if you were to change just some of those words that we were in contact with Big Brother, if they use the term Big Brother or we own the science, and that they were able to stop the misinformation and basically tell Google what they want out there. This is the UN. Does anyone who has two brain cells able to rub together trust the UN with anything? Honestly, when it comes to the human rights, did you know who's on the Human Rights Committee? You know who heads it? China is on there. North Korea is on there. I mean, some of the worst dictators and bloodiest countries in the world are on the UN voting for human rights amendments. I mean, what a horrible organization. But this woman's basically telling, we tell Google, what we want. And then Google does what we want them to do. So then they send out the information. So when you want to Google something, you're getting what they want you to understand. This is scary stuff.
Well, I Googled climate change, and the UN is number 7 in, as far as the list that goes down. There's stuff by NASA. There's stuff by nature.org. So Rainforest Alliance, Skeptics, there's that. And then down here, there is What is Climate Change? The United Nations.
I see. Okay. You think they're involved in some of the other first or second searches that are in there, too?
I imagine they probably may have their hand in that, but I don't think that they have an exclusive deal to put their stuff right on top. But they are on the front page, and you can only imagine how many articles there are about climate change. Oh. So they are in the top 10 for sure.
I mean, there was a study that was done in 2015, 2016. Can Google sway an election? We already know over the last couple of months that Biden's administration talks to tech on a regular basis. We know that from emails that were finally pried out of their hands. We find out that they talked to them on a weekly basis, told them what information to put out, what not information to put out regarding COVID, the lockdown, and all the rest. So they obviously have a party that they're in favor of continuing to keep power. So these studies that have been done have said, they can actually put the information out there that they want you to see and stop the information they don't want you to see. I don't think this is controversial to say something like that. But people, if you want to search up somebody and look online to find out that candidate, they'll tell you what they want you to see.
Mm-hmm.
And you're okay with that?
No, I'm not okay with that. I mean, I think that Google should not be in the pocket of anybody. I mean, Google is supposed to be a search engine that we can all use to, find out information. And of course, there's ads, and they're going to get priority over everything probably. But I don't think it's okay for anybody, any organization to manipulate them and for them to be able to say, okay, you put our information out first. And if it is something that is truly destructive, if it's something that is, violent or whatever, as a result of a search, you don't want to see that information first. But no, nobody should have that priority. just because they ask, or just because Google leans in that direction politically?
Well, they're not benign. I mean, they obviously have their job is to make money. That was a, their theme was do no evil or something. Yeah, something do no evil, or what was their sort of their motto or whatever?
Don't be evil, I think. Yeah.
Don't be evil. Yeah. Okay. Don't be evil. Well, they don't consider this to be evil. So they want to stop the evil forces. And the evil forces, of course, are the ultra MAGA domestic terrorists out there. So whatever they can do, you know, I know people that are like, oh, no, I don't do that. I do DuckDuck, or they go to some other site trying to find things, because they'll feed you what they want to feed you. And, you know, then they can sway the election. The one study I saw, anywhere between 4 million votes or anywhere between 2 million and 4 million votes, you can move depending on what searches you want to find. So I feel as if they're obviously they've got their mission statement other than to do something not to be evil. How about that? Amherst College introduces the dystopian anonymous survey that is going to all students. Oh my God. So they survey all the students. If one student says they're not comfortable, then, and they want everybody to wear a mask, then everybody has to wear the mask.
Yes, this is an improvement, though, because last month everybody was wearing masks still. They were requiring people to do it. And now they're saying we're going to put the power back in the classroom. So they're taking surveys in each classroom. And if the professor or the student or a student in the classroom says, I feel more comfortable with people wearing masks, then everybody has to do it. And it's a KN95 mask. So they say, so you can't be wearing your kitty cat mask like I wear. You have to wear like the real deal.
Oh my God. Well, this is Amherst College. I mean, you can't get more kooky than that group, but it only takes one neurotic individual, right? It's the same sort of thing. A friend of mine's, his ex-wife now had OCD, and she would make him, when he came home, when the kids came home from school, she would take a piece of butcher block paper, put it out in the garage. They had to strip down into their underwear, boy and a girl, leave their clothes on the floor, put on a robe, go shower, each one take turns showering, and put on fresh clothes. My buddy would come home. She made him take his hat off and stick it in the freezer for 48 hours, right? Because she was mentally ill with OCD, obsessive compulsive disorder. So in a way, you have somebody who's in this classroom who's got some sort of, obviously they're not really following the science, and now everyone else must act as nutty as this other person.
It's true. If the professor decides, you know, I'm worried about all these kids breathing on me, then everybody's got to wear it. It doesn't even matter if it's the professor. It could be one kid that might have a compromised condition or might have something, and they are led to believe that the mask is going to be the thing that saves them. They'll do it.
Yeah.
And they think this is a democracy because they're letting each classroom decide, as opposed to the university saying this must be done.
Right, but it's not a democracy. It's like one person, one vote, the majority rules, because then they would overrule the minority. So they're allowing one person to be able to flip the whole class.
Right, but more so than the university dictating an entire campus wearing the mask.
I see.
That type of thing.
I got it. We were going to get a chance to talk about this when it came to the FAA talking about the size of seats on airplanes, and we just didn't have time for it. But I found one of my favorite podcasts. I love listening to Barry Weiss. He's got Honestly, I think is the name of the podcast. And she had one a couple weeks ago, Why Are We Getting Fatter? She started the podcast talking about Michelle Obama, the Let's Move, and the whole idea, like, let's get kids to eat better and everybody to eat better. And nobody talks about it anymore. She said people have actually gotten bigger. I think 70% of people are overweight, and then certain percentage are morbidly obese. And she goes, now what has happened is, now what is the sort of the flip of all of that is, no, there's body positivity, and that I'm fat, but I'm not unhealthy, or it's good to be fat, or don't judge me, or it's racist or something else. So that culturally that's happening. And then deeper into the podcast, she has this doctor on who talks about why the government might want people to be fat. I thought, holy moly, is this not ripe field to talk
right now
about?
In the U.S., the two largest industries of private employment are the food service and the hospital staff. In 39 U.S. states, the largest employer is either Walmart, which is the country's biggest food seller, or a hospital system. So put another way, 78% of U.S. senators represent a state where a food retailer or a hospital is the biggest employer. Okay, so there's not an evil puppet master pulling the strings, but the incentives to keep these systems growing create an invisible hand to keep people eating more food and requiring more care.
Got it. High fructose corn syrup actually sends a signal to the brain to that you are not full yet and you need to keep eating. And the study is from a bear. So a bear goes into the woods and is trying to eat as much as it possibly can to hibernate. It finds a bush full of berries, which is fructose. And once it gets into the system of the bear eats and eats and eats and eats. And even though normally the bear would be full, the fructose sends a signal to the brain. No, you're not full yet. Keep eating. So this same thing has scientists creating food that's telling people, nope, you're not full yet. Keep going. Keep eating. Keep eating. So it's a way of manipulating the human body to consume more so that you can buy more so they can sell more so that, but you get fatter. But then when you get fatter, where do you go? You go to the hospital. And then she explained, why doesn't the hospital do anything? Like, where's the medical part of it stepping in?
You know, interestingly, until 2018, the American Diabetes Association actually advised endocrinologists that type 2 diabetes patients can eat as much sugar and carbs as they want, as long as they take their insulin to keep the blood sugar looking more stable. And this is particularly alarming because the ADA is not some front group. They are responsible for the licensing and credentialing doctors who treat diabetes. 40% of the ADA's budget comes from pharmaceutical companies that create diabetes, quote unquote, treatments like insulin. And they also have received millions from food companies like Coke and like Cadbury Chocolates and many, many other processed food companies. And they have licensed their logo to appear on sugar-loaded foods like Snackwell's cookies and Snapple in exchange for donations.
God. This is like some bad movie or something, isn't it?
I know. When you look at it like that, it just makes you not trust anything. You just think, come on, there's no way that this could really be happening. Nobody, are they really that deceptive? And it looks like in some cases they really are.
Well, it's such a hackneyed expression, but just to follow the money. And then you get into the personal stuff and the political stuff. She was talking about why doctors are uncomfortable talking about telling people about diet and exercise.
And then there was another social trend emerging that was disturbing, that almost like this inability to talk to patients about diet and exercise, because it could actually be construed as elitist or ableist or even racist. Because it's like, well, what if they can't access healthy food in their neighborhood? What if they can't walk? What if they don't have a leg? We definitely don't want to offend anyone. And particularly after the Affordable Care Act and the Quality Payment Program, which is a disaster, and sort of hot air about value-based care, which ties reimbursements to patient satisfaction.
Listen to this. So if the patient is satisfied, you get, and they review you, you get a higher review, you get more reimbursement. So you're not going to tell the person, do this, and make them feel bad. You're going to do all sorts of good stuff to make them feel good. And then you get, a higher reimbursement.
So you start talking to a patient about what they can do and the hard work they have to do and that they need to lose weight and all these things. And all of a sudden it becomes a liability for your reimbursements. And so there was just a couple really strange trends I was noticing that made me feel like we are not going to be able to dig ourselves out of this monumental problem, which is corrupting the ability of the American mind and body to have health, happiness, and reach their full potential.
And the thing that she said about the corrupting of it is the healthy at every size that, I'm morbidly obese, but, this is, don't judge me by this, accept this fat is beautiful. And it's there's nothing wrong with this, that I might be, you know, morbidly obese, but this is who I am and I'm living my own truth. It's like, oh my God.
Right.
And people are either just not saying anything or they're like, well, maybe here's a study that says maybe you're not going to die earlier.
Well, and also there's a whole other business component of that when it comes to fashion and all of those other things in the marketing of, you know, you still are beautiful. You still can wear, you know, these clothes. You can do all of these, you know, other things and you don't have to worry about your size because, where you are right now is where you should be. And there's no goal to get to be different. That's, you know, you can be big and beautiful and not have to worry about it because there's everything, you know, there's beautiful clothes to buy. There's all kinds of things to do. It's not like you're being, you know, edged out of something in society. There's many mm-hmm. things to accommodate your size. I just think that people on some level know better, even though they're being reinforced in some ways to believe that it's okay. I just have to believe that people aren't that dumb, that they think, you know, that this can't be right. This has to.
It's cognitive dissonance, right? Cognitive dissonances, right? Having two opposing thoughts in your head at the same time. Listen, when you light up that cigarette, you know. You know it's bad for you.
Right.
You know it. But you still inhale deeply. And you, I got to quit these things. I mean, people mm-hmm. refer to them as coffin nails. They know it. Same thing with food. They know it. I mean, when the kids were first born, Lace and I read this book called Food Inc. And I always said it was the most expensive used book we had ever purchased because then we went into this hole that we got chickens and we ate really clean food and we were going to get a cow and we're going to do this other stuff. We had this whole plan because you really realize that the way this industry produces food and what we're eating is so bad.
Mm-hmm.
So bad. So that's where I'm going to get myself a cow. That's my new thing.
Plastic cow or real cow this time?
Real cow. Real cow.
Okay.
Long hair, short hair. I like the long hair count.
I'm gonna let the cow decide, and then just, you know, do different things, and maybe have a fall. You know what? Isn't that they call those falls? That's the fake hair you can put in.
Oh my goodness. Yeah,
from 1965 Miss America pageant. Yes, a fall.
Are you gonna get
really
it?
They don't really wear those too much anymore, but you could get it a neat little hair piece.
Are you gonna eat the cow?
No.
Okay, good.
Oh, and not.
You're gonna milk
not,
it?
Well, it's living. This is. Right now. This is. Let me just. I'm still thinking about the hair. All of a sudden. All right.
Okay.
Hey,
all right.
Grab it, please. Yeah. Bucky's Auto Service Centers, you know, they've got 16 locations. They've been around for 52 years, and that's a good long time to be around doing it right. The men and women at Bucky's Auto Service Centers fixing your car right, wearing those rubber gloves long before it was fashionable. Thank you, Bucky's. Thank you. Sincerely. Anything you want to say, Sherry, about Bucky's? Bucky's Auto Service Center, 16 locations. Why American boys are not again, yeah, professional. You can look it up. That's what you do. American boys are failing at school and men are losing at life. This is a New York Post story. If you go back to 2014, there was this idea of toxic masculinity, the idea that boys need to be more feminine and boys shouldn't be roughhousing and sit and be quiet. And, you know, can't you just be less masculine? The masculinity was bad and it causes all sorts of problems. I guess that stuff sort of seeps through, and if you get enough of that in school, then eventually you hit a certain point in your teenage years and early 20s and start feeling like, geez, where do I belong in society? Especially if you're a white male living in America, you're kind of considered, you know, you're the bad guy. So in this case, they're failing in schools and they're not showing up at work. Where are they and why did they leave, Sherry, according to this piece?
Well, it's pretty grim. One in four boys, they say, have a developmental disability. One in four black children or black boys repeat a grade. And 60% of college women or college students are women. So there is a real decline in terms of education with boys. And they say that schools need to be more male friendly. They need to really promote male teachers because boys might relate a little bit more to male teachers. Remember how many, you know, there's only like 3% of kindergarten teachers are actually male. They also say that, you know, they need to make sure that, you know, boys can stay back a year. I think we talked about this before, that because boys mature later than girls, it's not a bad idea maybe to start them a little bit later. So they have a year or so to grow and they have a year or so to be more mature when they actually enter into school. In New York State, that's illegal. You can't do that. So that was another suggestion. And 10 million men, young men, just aren't working at all. They just don't even have jobs. So It's a problem that's starting very, very young and then, you know, leads kids into the college years and then beyond if they can't find a job, if they're not educated.
Yeah, it is amazing when you look at the work participation level, 18 to 27, they have dropped out to such a point that people, when they look at the data, that something's wrong, that we missed a number here or there. And they test it again. They're like, where are these people? Well, they're home. They're not working. They're playing video games. They're sitting home at their parents' house or somebody else's house. They have odd jobs, if any job at all. Because what's happened is the economy has changed to the point that you don't have to be strong. You can just sit at a desk and do STEM. You can sit at a desk and do data entry. You could sit at a desk, do something else. Not as necessary for you to sort of, succeed at the job by, you know, bending at the knees and lifting something heavy. And very little skills and very little initiative. So they have just sort of fallen off and they're just physically not actively participating in life. And it's just watch a lot of porn and play a lot of video games and get high and there's no place for you. It's very odd.
Well, but STEM jobs, you know, science, tech, engineering, and math, there was a big effort to get girls involved in this. Obama did a lot to do this, to try to get the girls to start to focus on that and major in those things. So that's 27% women in colleges. There's a lot of women that are doing that. But the other jobs of health, education, and administration and literacy, which they call the HEAL jobs, that's 26% of all jobs. And there aren't enough men going into those fields at all. Some of the men are still staying in the STEM programs, but they think that men need to be able to be encouraged and recruited to get into these HEAL jobs like healthcare. You know, those types of jobs, education. I guess it's starting at a very early level in schools. Boys aren't being promoted that way. Those jobs aren't being promoted to boys, rather.
And also the idea that boys needed to be calmed down, that boys are too rambunctious. The mask to be masculine is to somehow, be making a choice that is, directly opposed or at least somehow interacting with a feminine characteristic that they're opposed to one another, when really you can have both at the same time. A guy can be a guy and you don't have to shame him for being a guy. And boys behave differently, act differently, speak differently. They have more energy, or at least they expend energy differently than a girl. But if you're trying to sort of homogenize the classroom and tone down the boy, tone down and get the kid to act more in line with a feminine behavior, this is where this idea of this toxic masculinity stuff came along. Having grown up in school where it was all boys schools all the way through from the time I was in kindergarten to senior in high school, I didn't see the difference in the thing. But Rye was telling me that when he was in school, they were always trying to tap down that stuff as opposed to, you know, just knowing that the boys tend to act out differently than the girls. So,
well, it's harder for the teacher, too. You know, if you've got a bunch of unruly kids, you're going to do everything you can to keep that classroom under control. So there's an incentive for the teachers to want to make sure that the boys are behaving themselves. And sometimes that led to a lot of medication, a lot of diagnoses of ADHD and those types of things.
Right. Sad. It's all a story in the Seattle Times. We'll have to get to this one about gym memberships that apparently... Gym memberships, when the government decided that if you wanted to go to the gym to work out, because that's one of the best things you can do for your immune system is actual exercise. And like in the state of Washington, Inslee closed those gyms, so you couldn't really improve your immune system. You weren't allowed to work out because that was bad for you. And then it looks Seattle was where seventh. People have not gone back to the gym again. Is that right?
That's right. Yeah, so. they're either working out at home or not working out at all.
I know what happened, and it's not even mentioned in this article. And that's why I sent. Did you see what I thought of? Did I send it to you? Did you look at it, or you didn't even bother looking at it?
No, that something like most like 67%.
No, not like. No. So we'll save it.
67% of people. Yeah. Okay. All right. I just want to show. I did look. Mm-hmm. I looked.
You're a fast reader.
I am.
Yeah. Okay. And you're also humble. Mickey, looking at traffic for us like no one else can. Here we go. Here we go. The John Curley, Sherry Elliker show. I don't know if this says something about me, but I was thinking, when I watched this video, I thought, why didn't people start cheating this way a long time ago? Right? It doesn't make sense. There's no way these guys are the first people who's like, hey, listen, we're going to get money if the fish weighs more than somebody else's fish. Let's just stuff stuff down its mouth, right? Just throw lead balls in there. So I can't believe that, like, no one has ever done this before, but these guys get caught. The weirdest moment is when they're just standing right there as they're cutting the fish open and finding these big lead balls inside the fish.
Everybody listen to me right now. Jake, I want you to leave. I don't want any...
By the way, just to paint a bit, everyone there is 40 pounds overweight and everyone has a baseball hat on. True?
Mm-hmm. True.
Everyone. Everyone.
Yep.
Okay. A sea of baseball hats, a lot of shirts that have something written on about fishing. I'd rather do fishing than don't tell my wife, and all the funny fish hats, all the fish fear me, women love me, those hats. Through the whole crowd. So this guy's trying to organize everybody.
Don't need to touch these guys.
Don't we need to file a police report?
Jason, we got to file a police report.
So now he's got other people that agree. Yeah, yeah. Todd said it's right. Got to file a police report. Got to get that first.
A filleted fish. Look at this.
Oh, he's reaching inside the fish after they cut the fish in half, and they're finding big metal balls of lead. Plus, there was a fillet of fish inside the fish. So, like, another fish is inside the
like
fish.
Like a Russian doll.
A filleted fish.
Yeah.
A walleye fillet. He needs to go to jail.
You have anything to say,
Jim? Hey, you call the cops.
I got video.
You got anything to say?
He's just standing right there. Yeah.
But I was so surprised at how aggressive the fishermen were. Like, I think of fishing as like this really peaceful, you know, laid back kind of sport, and they were on fire.
There's money on the line, Sherry.
$100,000.
Yeah. Tom Nelson was on talking to Dory
Believe
about
me,
it.
You would rather be trying to steal a bear cub from an angry sow than cheat a bunch of guys at a derby. These knuckleheads would have won almost $30,000. The event they were at was part of the Lake Erie Walleye Trail. Now walleye in the Great Lakes are held in almost as high regard as salmon are out here. They're very good eating.
Whoa.
And these guys these guys are in trouble up to their, you know what?
But that's not that high. Up to their Adam's
you know
apple.
You know what is.
People would mention Adam's apple or chin or nose it's your you know what, and that's not so bad. You still have a half your body to go. Okay, more.
Yeah, okay.
Jacob Runyon and Chase Comiskey are the two anglers. And if you look at their track record over the past year, they had won almost $300,000. They're professional anglers, okay? And they're, you know, here's the deal. At this latest event, their fish were shorter than the second place fish, but they weighed almost 5 pounds more. Dude, you have to be, you know, probably within a pound, maybe 2 pounds, right? Because everybody's going to be so close in this stuff. So that was number one. Then when they started opening these fish up, like you mentioned, they found lead weights, but they also found walleye fillets. So they'd taken these chunks of meat and wrapped them up in, you know, around the lead and stuffed them in these poor fish's gullets. I mean, and just those guys were lucky to make it out of that weighing alive, dude.
I'm surprised that somebody didn't start throwing punches. Isn't it possible, Your Honor, that the fish consumed lead balls prior to being caught?
No, sir. No. Not possible. Because the fish would know better than to eat a lead ball. Now, the fish might have eaten another fish, but then it would have been digested. So, No, that does not hold up. I do not accept that evidence.
All right. So you're going with the fact that they stuffed multiple lead balls down the throat of the dead fish in order to win the thing.
How did they think they weren't going to get caught if
I
they
think the
knew?
One guy's like, hey, did you stuff it with lead balls? Yeah. Oh, my God, I did, too. Oh, my God. I thought that was my job. No. I was stuffing it with raw life, with other fish parts.
Oh no. What?
Right?
So
the one fish that's a foot long is going to weigh 70 pounds.
So no. This guy's saying that if they had just not been so greedy, like if they made it like 1 pound more, it wouldn't have been suspicious. They would have gone, okay, here's the money. But since it was 5 pounds more, they're like, oh, come on.
Exactly. Yeah. Oh. It had a, you know, and it had wrenches in there, all sorts of tools. All right. Because making the traffic. Get us home safely, please.
Oh, you got it. Still your typical traffic commute, Seattle to Everett. It's 49 minutes. Traffic again slows once you enter.